those songs were written around the same time as the first album, and didn't make it to the first album, not because I didn't like them, but because there just wasn't a space for them. And I write a lot of music, so I have a lot of backlog of stuff that I'll probably release, but it's just, you know, I like all my releases, I like every song to have a spot, you know. So yeah, in regards to the bass, yeah, I no, man, not really. more than anything, I think lyrics were what I kind of focused on.
Okay. I remember last time we were talking about the instruments you use, and you said you always use this one Fender bass, and then you were using an SG bass as well. Same thing again this time around, or?
Yeah, this is the Fender bass right here. It's
beauty.
Every single band I've ever been in since 1993, about four, I reckon, since 1994. Yeah, I use the SG bass a lot. I actually use the SG a lot more these days because, I don't know, it just sits in the mix a bit nicer. Maybe that's why, you know, maybe that's why you're hearing it more. It's got the setting on it that's super bassy and blown out. If my Fender's not working and it's just struggling to get the right sound, I grab that one with that setting and it's just like, oh, there it is. You know, it's just such a completely different sound to the Precision. But yeah, those are pretty much the only two basses I use still.
Cool. And I'm assuming it's similar for guitars. You just have the same set that you use. You had the Epiphone last time. You said you love that one.
Yeah, I still use the Epiphone a lot. It's my go-to because it just, you know, it just instantly works. You know, if I try to think too much about, oh, let's go for some crazy guitar sound or something different, it just, you know, I don't know, sometimes it just doesn't end up working, and that guitar always works out. But I actually did buy something probably before the last album. It's definitely on Beyond Everything. I bought a Fender Tele. Always wanted a Fender Tele, and I bought one because I went to a store, a little great little store in Marin County in California, and I'm friends with the guy, and he said you should try this guitar out. And it's an early 90s American made Tele. It's really heavy, and it just sounded great, and I was like, I'm gonna get this. It wasn't crazy expensive or anything, so I got it, and that's also a guitar that I feel like if I put it on a recorder, it just works, you know?
Something, I'm always really amazed because I know you record this stuff primarily all yourself with the exception of the drums, but it always has such a live, spontaneous feel. But all the records do, but especially even on tracks, like the last track on this, is A Room With No View.
Yeah.
Is it, like, do you track all the instruments with, like, a drum machine? I don't know if I've asked this before. If I have, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, Room With A View is a really great example of spontaneity. When I'm writing and recording, I'm always trying to write and record a whole song in one take. I have not much, you know, thought about what I'm going to do, and I sit down. I usually get a drum beat up and going, and I press record, and my aim is to get all the lyrics, everything, just in one run through, you know, before I've written anything, because it does create that spontaneity and that organicness. And Room With No View, I was sitting down somewhere. I just thought, oh man, I want to write. I got an urge to write a song that was just kind of slow and heavy and dirgy. And I had a guitar sound in my mind. And I went to my recording setup and I came up with just a slow, kind of heavy drum beat. Programmed that, made it like half an hour long, you know, got my guitar sound, and at the start of that song you can actually hear me playing in E, just going, getting the sound. And I recorded, I just sat down, pressed record, jammed for 30 minutes, and then I cut that down into 7 minutes, which is what Room No View is, with Room No View is. So that's one guitar take, that whole song.
Oh, wow.
Edited down, and then I just went back and I listened to it and I put some bass on it. And the same thing, I just tried to sort of follow it and then just go back and sort of fix up any bits that needed to be fixed with the bass. And then I did the same with the lyrics and the vocals. And, you know, it was very sort of just quick and off the cuff. And that to me is when I do my best stuff.
I wanted to ask just about a couple of the tracks on the album. I know you said you focused on lyrics a little more this time around, but they still have that spontaneous feel, which is really great. It's a couple tracks like Diamond Sea. I want to ask about, like, just maybe what you remember with coming up with these songs. I have just a few I want to ask about.
Yeah, Diamond Sea. I'm really proud of those lyrics because it's something special to me. I mean, I guess the idea was I did have an idea, you know, and the idea was to write a song about some friends that are no longer alive. And it was a group of friends when I was about 15. We all went to acid for the first time together. We got up early one morning. One of the guys, his brother was a drug dealer. He got us some acid. We went to the beach at 6 a.m. in the morning. There's some beautiful beaches where near where I grew up. We went at 6 a.m. We took acid and we had the best day of our lives. And, you know, we didn't take too much. You know, we just took enough to sort of go, is this working? Is this not working kind of thing? But having such an amazing time. And yeah, now half of those people are not alive. So that song is about that day and those people, I guess.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites on the record. Also, Rocks On.
Rocks On. Yeah. Rocks On. I guess the title is a play on Rocks Off by Rolling Stones. You know, whenever I'm recording, the first thing I do, I don't really record to tape because I don't have the space or the means necessary, and part of my whole process is just to work with the tools that I have. And the first thing I do is when I open a session, I have to save it and give it a name. So I try to come up with a cool name, and that's that. And for that song, I don't know, man. It was like I didn't really have any plans of vocals, and it was just kind of stream of consciousness. Like most of my songs, I kind of just play guitar and sing along to the beat and or bass, and I just sort of mouth sounds. And then words start to pop out, and then ideas start to form, and that's what happened with that one. And it's kind of ended up being kind of, I think, kind of about, I don't know, like the people being under the thumb of the government, and just kind of like people being mean to each other, and just like the whole cold vibe of our society, I guess. But yeah, I really like the structure of that because it's not formulaic. And it took me a while to get the structure because I had to have it so it kind of felt right without being too smart or something. So it took me a little bit just to sort of fiddle around with that one.
I don't mind.
I mean, Rocks On, Director Rocks On, it's one of those songs that quite often I record and I spend quite a bit of time on a song and then I know I need to stop. And I don't know if it's going to be anything, but then I listen back to it and I get, every time I hear it, I go, oh, I like this song, this is cool. And that's those are the songs that make the records, are the ones where I often just let them sit for quite a while. And if I keep, you know, come across them by mistake and I'm like, oh yeah, this is cool. And that keeps happening, then I know it's going to be good enough for an album because it excites me. I can't judge on anyone else, but I Don't Mind was written around very early, around the first album. I guess it's the only. There's a couple of songs written around the first album, that and maybe Shockwave, but I Don't Mind. It was definitely written around. I liked it, but it just didn't have a spot. There are a couple of things I didn't like about it that I couldn't fix. Vocals, the lyrics kind of being one of them. Yeah. There's some lyrics in there that I've never been super stoked about. It's kind of stream of consciousness, but you know, at the same time, sometimes you just gotta go, well, you know what, maybe I can live with that, and maybe that'll be someone else's favorite part of the song, you know.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes that happens, you know. I still really like a lot of stuff about this song.
I love the chorus in that one. You said yeah, a couple of tracks are from like different time periods. What are maybe one or two of the newer tracks that you kind of came up with for this?
Okay, Secrets is newer. I'm going through the order. Nikki is newer. Diamond Sea is newer. Rocks On is kind of mid-period. Mm-hmm. I Walk Away is newer. In the Rivers No View is newer. Yeah, those are kind of the newer ones. So most of it.
And last time we were talking, you mentioned how each record is a little different when you were putting them together. Like your first record, you said you were DJing a lot. The second record, you said you were kind of not really listening to too much music. Was there anything you were maybe listening to or that was kind of around you this time around that was different?
No, I didn't really have. I guess my inspiration was more, you know, I find more, a lot of the time these days, my inspiration moves less, more away from music and into other areas, mm-hmm. like art or movies and things like that, you know. I'm around music so much that I tend to, when I'm not making it, not listen to it a lot. You know, I have been DJing a lot recently, so, you know, and we've been touring a lot, so there's music in the van. But musically, not really, man. Sometimes I'll have a little look around. I'll go down a wormhole on YouTube or something, and some stuff will excite me. But, you know, I find it harder and harder to get excited by a lot of musical stuff these days. But sometimes, you know, I come across something. But, yeah, I would say more movies, actually, you know, and stuff.
I was going to ask about if we had time, but this is a good time to ask this question. The video for I Walk Away, I wanted to ask you about that. I'm assuming it has some root in some sort of movie background, but maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, kind of. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I you know, that's my, you know, I kind of really like that video because I nailed my aesthetic in some ways because I like movies. I like all sorts of movies, but I often like movies from the 80s, like, you know, the first Terminator movie, kind of action movie, you know, horror movies, things like that, that are kind of like, Terminator was on my 10th birthday, I believe. My parents let me choose a couple of movies and that to watch with my friends, and that was one of them, and it had a huge impact on me. But yeah, that video came together real quick. It was just like a last minute idea, a simple idea. You know, it was inspired by a D4 video as well, like Exit to the City. There's a bit in that video that expired, the organ part, when the organ sort of comes out. A balaclava, you know, there's a band called the Ripoffs that I really like, and they used to wear balaclavas, so that kind of inspired that. But yeah, just kind of, I wanted it to be evil and kind of like, I don't know.
It's got some horror vibes too, that's for sure.
Yeah. I just, I actually shot it the same day as the Secrets video. Oh. And we've been on a location scout for the Secrets video. And we shot it in an old Knights of Columbus hall. And there was just back, in the back area, there was this little crevice. And I was like, that's got a vibe. Let's make it the I Walk Away video there, you know, just in that small little corner. Yeah.
You do a lot of the recording, like you say you have a lot of backlog and you do stuff a lot on your own. Would you ever consider maybe doing like a live album with the full band, or maybe an album with the full band again?
I mean, I consider doing a live album, doing some stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know about recording in the studio. Yeah, I mean, I consider recording in a studio setting if it, you know, if the moment lent itself. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little wary of it because A, it costs a lot of money to do that, and I don't have barely any money, which is why I record my own records by myself in my little home studio, because they don't barely cost me anything, and things aren't really changing for me at the moment financially, so I have to keep it cheap. So, you know, going into studio with a full band is just like, you know, I do all the drums for a record in one day. It costs me like a few hundred dollars, and that's that, you know. And to go in with a band, you know, and wonder if there's going to be anything to come out at the end of it, and also the fact that the music is under my own name, mm-hmm. not for reasons of self-adulation or anything like that, but just because of the fact that it is who I am. It is musically, I'm tapping into the essence of who I am, and it's kind of a self-discovery thing. Mm-hmm. And to have other players start to be on the records and maybe putting in their two cents, you know, could take away from that. You know, I do all the artwork, I do all the videos, I perform it all, and it's and that's, you know, I for this specific project, that's what it's about. That's what this idea is for this project. If I was to do something, if I wanted to play with people, I'd form record with others. I'd like, you know, form another band and have a different idea, you know. But this specifically is a self-discovery, no kind of, what do you call it when you meet in the middle? None of that.
No compromise.
No compromise. Exactly how I want it to be, you know. My idea, you know. Takes a long time because of that.
No, I was just wondering, because, you're playing a lot live and playing with a lot of different people. I was just curious.
No, there's no rules, you know. Like, if the moment lent itself, yeah, sure, I'm open to anything.
I wanted to ask a few questions about D4, actually. You reissued 620 not too long ago, and you've reunited a couple times. I just wanted to ask, like, what was it like maybe revisiting that era, those songs, playing them again with the band?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, it's not something I really, like, you know, it's not something that I want to concentrate on and, like, you know, put all my eggs into that basket. But it's a lot of fun doing it now and then and hanging out with those guys. All the times we've got back together, it's been nothing but pleasurable. You know, it's pretty low stress. It's a lot of work, actually, but it's low stress. Like, you know, doing any band stuff's a lot of work, but it's low stress. You know, we've always got along pretty well. You know, the band has always, particularly Jimmy and I, we've always got along. We've never really... We still talk a lot, you know. There's never been any... I know we work together very well, more so than I have with anybody else. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I think we'll probably do some... We actually have plans to do a few more things coming up. A lot of cool stuff, actually, coming up. Not a lot, but there's a couple of things coming up that I think is going to be real cool.
Okay, well, maybe you can't say, but I'm wondering, like, are you going to do anything with the second album, maybe?
Yeah, I think we're gonna reissue the second. We're gonna issue the second album on vinyl for the first time.
Nice. Yeah, I know, it's just CD. I remember actually, I bought that one when it came out. I remember getting it.
Yeah, we're gonna, you know, you heard it here first. we're gonna do that. We're gonna reissue it for the first time, or we're gonna issue it for the first time on vinyl, and then we'll probably tour it in New Zealand, possibly Australia, and even maybe some other places.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've recently been reading, actually, this book. I just finished it, Needles in Plastic, which is about Flying Nun's early days. And I know D4 put out both your albums on Flying Nun, I think, right?
Yeah.
I just was wondering, maybe, like, I don't think I've ever asked this. How did you get connected with Flying Nun back then? And maybe what are some of your favorite, maybe there's probably a lot, but what are some of your favorite like bands you could think of or releases from the label?
I mean, Flying Nun of that era, is that to 98? Does it
it goes to 88.
That's a completely different beast to what Flying Nun that I was on. That Flying Nun is the Flying Nun everybody knows. The Flying Nun I was on was sort of like, had just been bought by Warner Music. So it was just, Warner Music was just kind of using the name and trying to, you know, sign some young acts that were doing stuff that didn't really have much in common with those early acts, I don't feel. Mm-hmm. But they were also acts that were doing things in New Zealand that had, I mean, I guess the things in common were we built our own, the D4 built our own fan base, and there was an organic excitement about the D4 and Betcha Duper and bands like that at the time. And Flying Nun jumped on that. At the time, to be honest, I really didn't like any Flying Nun stuff. I was just kind of like, it all sounded kind of weak to me and a little bit like, it just wasn't what I was into. You know, and I've come to change my mind on that quite a bit. You know, like that's actually, Chris Knox is an exception to that rule. I'm gonna Toy Love, The Enemy. The Enemy weren't on Flying Nun, but Chris Knox was hugely involved in recording the bands, finding the bands, distributing the records, doing the artwork, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always loved Chris Knox, and I think he's an amazing songwriter, amazing DIY artist, amazing personality, amazing guy. I know him personally, he's a great guy. And since then, you know, I've come to love a lot of those bands, especially The Clean. I really like The Clean. I think they've just got some really cool songs, a really cool sound, you know, of their own. So yeah, I guess I was young and dumb, you know, I was just like into Team Generate and the Stooges and the Ramones, and you know, I just at the time I found it all too jangly, you know, too kind of poppy.
There's a lot of jangle
but I've come to appreciate and not just appreciate and love that, you know, that stuff. I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's just a very interesting story too. I'm happy that a book like this came out, because I knew a little bit, but maybe not that much.
I haven't read it. I lived with Shane Carter. Me and Shane Carter lived together for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
Right before I moved to the USA, we lived through, and we had a fantastic time living together. We had a little studio in our basement, and our D4 would record there. He recorded most of his second Dimmer album there. And yeah, we had a great time. We were both going through horrible breakups at the time. And we had a great time. Yeah, I know a lot of those people now, and I've come to love and respect that whole thing.
So I don't have too many other questions. I was going to ask if there was time. I don't know too much about this, but it said you played with Flowers of Evil with members of Crocodiles. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
I don't even know when it formed. Probably 2014 or something. I wasn't on any of the records.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the band when it started playing, when it kind of formed and started playing live. And I was the original guitarist with me and Brandon. I played, I played with them for a year or two, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I left the band right before they made the second album. I was just too busy with Strangers and other stuff. It was a fun band to be in. It was really explosive live. I feel like I didn't stick around enough, or the band wasn't around enough to really hit the mark. I think it could have done some great stuff, because yeah, the members, especially when Chuck joined, were three guitars. Like originally it was two guitar attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chuck came to a show from Crocodiles, and he was up the front going crazy. I just knew that he wanted to be in the band, and he joined the band, and it became a three guitar attack, and the bass player David South was like, I mean, he's one of the most explosive players I've ever played with. He's just like, he's like this kind of guy where if he's in a box, it vibrates, and as soon as you let him out, it's everywhere. And that's not just on stage, that's off stage too. This is personality, but he's great, really cool bass player. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What's next for you musically? I know you mentioned earlier before they started the interview that you're going to come through with some U.S. dates.
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of U.S. dates coming up. I have three coming up in February, Rochester, Troy, and Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then I got like a Midwest tour coming up. That's going to be great. I'm going to be doing some shows with a band called Motorbike, which are good friends of mine, which I'm really stoked about. It's going to be Midwest. And then I'm going to go back to Europe for a little bit. And then I got like an East Coast, Southeast down to Florida and back happening in September. And then I got a West Coast tour happening in October. Yeah, and then maybe some other stuff as well.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I've kind of neglected the USA for a while now because of the finances. It's just like, it's so hard. Yeah, I tried to do it for a little bit, but I just couldn't do it, make it work. And Europe was working for me, so I thought, well, that's where I'll concentrate. But now I've got a US booking agent. He's really been great in kind of helping with the finances and making it all work, you know.
And you're coming through Detroit, you said.
I think I am coming through, yep. Going to be coming through there. Not too sure when or... I think it's going to be June, late June.
Okay. Yeah. Dion, that's pretty much it. Is there anything else you want to add, maybe, or...?
You know, I just say, you know, the record's out there. It's actually not in stores quite yet. It's going to be in stores early February 9th, I believe it's going to be in stores. So, you know, it's available on my Bandcamp. It's available on the In The Red Records site. Or you can support your local store once it comes in. But yeah, go get it.
You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. Also syndicating across several different stations throughout Canada. I'm your host, Dave, joined by Adam.